eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 287 of The Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. The entire lot is back together since probably the first time since maybe last Friday. You two had, or no, last Wednesday, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, even Friday, we didn't have Bridget, so.
So Bridget and Scott, it's our first time, the three of us together, since the trade deadline, though. We've all given our thoughts on this platform. So maybe we'll start with the St. Louis game and our opening shifts from there. So Scott, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So this is, I want to make it clear, this is not why the Bruins lost. But there was a controversial call in this game. Justin Brazeau seemed to score to cut the Blues lead to 3-1 with about a little over 8 minutes left in the second period. Blues challenge for offsides, win the challenge, and the goal comes off the board. Controversy comes with, why was it offsides? Because it certainly looked to me like Tory Krug pulled the puck back into his own zone, which should have negated the offsides. If a defending player brings the puck back into his own zone, it doesn't matter if there was an attacking player offside. So the official NHL explanation from the Situation Room made no mention of Krug bringing it back in. They just completely ignored the point. Jim Montgomery did say after the game that the explanation that the refs gave him was that it was a battle play and not a possession play by Krug, which the NHL rulebook does not differentiate between those two. So I'm very confused as to why it came off the board when, by the letter of the law, it seems like it should have been a negated offsides. By the way, also didn't help that the ref's microphone, when he went to explain the ruling to the crowd, didn't work. So the only thing the crowd heard was no goal and saw the wave out. So just great job by the NHL all around to explain this one. We're morning after recording here, and
I still
have absolutely no idea. I think the NHL just straight up got it wrong, blew it, and can't explain it because they know they got it wrong.
Yeah, no, like a battle play. Like, no, you can pass the puck back into your own end. And I don't understand what. I don't get the ruling either, honestly. It's one of those ones where I was telling Scott, I was like, these are the kind of plays that make me look stupid as a broadcaster, because I'm trying to explain it the best I know how to. And what they're doing is like completely different than what's common sense to talk about during a review. And it's, if I had been broadcasting that game, I would have looked down, because I would have said something completely different than what they ended up ruling. Either that, or it just would have made the refs look dumber. I don't know. But it was a weird play. We watched it a bunch of times, and you second guess yourself on a few angles, and then you're like, no, wait a minute, that he brought it back in. Anyway, my opening shift, we can tie into trade deadline a little bit, because My opening shift has to do with the third D pair. Lauri, Shattenkirk was that D pair against St. Louis, and they were not good. Shattenkirk was on the ice for three goals against. Lauri was on the ice for three goals against. They're both deep in the minus on the night. The Hayes goal, Shattenkirk just wasn't in the right position to make the play. Like, one of the goals, he tried to lift the stick and it didn't work, and it just ended up being an easy tap-in goal. I mean, at that point in time, the game was a little bit out of reach. I think that was the fourth goal?
Yeah, that was the 4-0 goal.
Yeah, the sod goal. So it was ugly. They didn't have good chemistry together. They seemed to be beat on a bunch of different plays. I don't know. Usually you say the strengths of a Shattenkirk and a Lauri are transition game, like getting the puck out, getting in the offensive zone. I can't remember a shift really where they played all that much time in the offensive zone. They didn't have it. And that ties into the trade deadline, because they added a new defenseman, Andrew Peak, and they could put Weatherspoon back in. And maybe you go to that for a game, because it seems like both Shattenkirk and Lauri just need to take a step back, work on some things in practice, I guess, and give the new guy a try. They didn't want to put him in this game because they wanted him to have a full practice before going into his first game. So he'll have that today, and then he should be able to play at Montreal.
Well, really, he'll have it on Wednesday, because Tuesday is an optional practice. So I'm sure he'll be on the ice, but it won't be like a full team practice.
Either way, he will more than likely play in Montreal. I think we all kind of see the timeline there for him to get into his first game.
Probably, yeah. We can definitely get into that more, because I have thoughts on Lauri and Shattenkirk too, but. Yeah, if I had to guess right now, I would guess that they do exactly what you're suggesting. I think Weatherspoon and Peak probably both go in on Thursday.
Yeah, and that Kevin Hayes goal, you know, kind of starts with a bad pinch or a misread by Lauri at the offensive blue line. And, you know, Lauri is kind of he reminds me of when we talk about Georgi Mrkulov or Fabian Lysell, like if they were ever to get called up to Boston. You wouldn't want to put them in a fourth line role because it's not where they excel. I kind of feel like Lauri, I feel like he kind of has to be in a top four role playing with a top four caliber player to kind of get the best out of him. Playing him with Shattenkirk, I just don't think is ideal for his skill set. And, but again, we can talk more about that. So Scott wrote an article for EEI.com about Jim Montgomery's post game commentary. And I just want to mention, cause this is my opening shift, the beginning of the article, Scott, you mentioned how at the end of the game, the Bruins were greeted with a chorus of boos by the home crowd. And I just for the record, so Bridget, if you're listening, this is the situation where I'm with you. Like this is a situation where, look, if you're coming off of a great performance against Pittsburgh, a really strong performance against Toronto, like even in the loss to Edmonton, they played like the Bruins have been playing really good hockey the last week and a half, I would say, certainly since their post all-star break skid. That's a situation where, look, they didn't play great last night, but you got maybe have a better read of the room if you're the fans. Like that's a situation where, like, I don't know, like you have a goal that Scott talked about that was called back. Like maybe things changed at that point. Like that one I don't necessarily agree with, the Bruins getting booed last night, but
yeah, they were out shooting them. They were like, it wasn't like they were getting good scoring chances. They weren't going in. I think it was at the end of the second period when they were down 4-0 was when you heard the loudest boos. And yeah. And then again at the end of the game, but not quite as loud because the angry people had already left. So
yeah. I mean,
I think it would have been louder if people didn't already just go to drink across the street.
And again, like Scott and I have mentioned in the past, and Bridge, I don't think you necessarily disagreed with this. I mean, fans pay good money. They can do whatever they want. Whether or not one agrees with it is a different story. But like every team down 4-0 after two, like I get it. You're not going to be happy as a fan that went to the game, but every team in the NHL has a game where they're down like multiple. It just, you can't do it every time because I feel like it loses its meaning as well. There's kind of there's a balance to play there. And Scott, I don't know if you had a quick follow-up to this because it's not my opening shift, but it was earlier on in your article. I wanted to mention it real quick.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I tweeted this out last night that, you know, because I think that was my opening shift, like one of those might have been after the Washington game, right, that week after All-Star break where they had two stinkers in three games. And yeah, I didn't think this was that kind of game. Like, I didn't think, yes, their execution was poor. I thought their effort was there. Like, I thought they worked to get scoring chances. They made mistakes. They were sloppy.
I thought the bottom six played well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you. And like, I tweeted that out and got quite a bit of interaction with it and got feedback from people who disagreed and still thought it was perfectly fine to boo. It got a couple tweets from people who were there and were like, this is the one game I'm going to this season. You know, dropped hundreds of dollars, brought my family, and like, that's what we saw. And it's like, that was kind of my point originally was, you know, if you shell out all that money and you see a team that doesn't even look like it's really giving an honest effort, I get it. I guess to an extent, like, I still get in this case. Like, I totally get that frustration. If this was the one game, you know, you saved up your money to go to, and they're down 4-0 at the end of two periods. Like, yeah, like that's a real bummer. Like, that sucks. I totally get it.
But like, you know, when you buy the tickets, there's two outcomes. There's a win or a loss. It could be a loss. Like, you know, it's like you don't go in. I know you want to see a good game, but like, you can't. I don't know. It could be a loss. You go in knowing that you might be going to a game that they're not going to win.
Right. And you go to a game, to your point, Bridget, knowing that they're going to win or they're going to lose. So understood. But what you can hopefully guarantee when you go to a game is that you're going to go to a game and the team's going to give an honest effort. And to our points right now, like last night, yes, like that was an honest effort. And whereas like a month ago, that they were no showing those games, like in all departments. And I just think there's a little bit of a difference. Not that people aren't going to be annoyed or frustrated that they go to a game and they're getting outscored 4-0 after two, but if you notice that they're playing harder, then yeah, it's kind of, again, everybody has their own opinion and their right to do whatever they want, but I just found that interesting.
If you couldn't tell, I've never booed at a game before, and I went to see Cam Newton.
Have you ever?
That took a lot of restraint.
Have you ever been at home watching TV booing or screaming? No, oh, come on! Not. Come on!
I mean, maybe like...
Shoot!
No, definitely not that. We hear Scott and I hear the funniest times when people yell shoot. They'll be next to us and the drunk guy in the stands next to us is just like screaming shoot when it's like 200 feet away from the goal.
Yeah, I think it was either Saturday or maybe one of the games last week. Bridget, I don't know if you were there, if it was one of the games you missed, but someone below us yelled shoot when the puck was like rimming around the boards out of the zone. And like no one had possession of it. The puck's just sliding out of the zone. And this guy's like, shoot. Yeah.
You mean to tell me, Bridget, Scott's not up there with, you know, handfuls of popcorn. Pasta, shoot it, pasta.
Part of that is right. Part of that's true. He's stuffing his face with popcorn, and he does complain about stuff, but not usually telling people when to shoot it.
Right.
I think I told you guys this story before. One time I was at a game and I was next to this woman who was yelling at someone they were going the wrong way. And I was like, I think they know which way they're supposed to go, but you know, I'm pretty sure they know. Thanks for the help.
I yell expected goal. I say, guys, right, get an expected goal.
Hide your chance.
So I'll just quickly get to my opening shift. Again, it's part of Scott's article, but Jim Montgomery, after last night's game, 5-1 loss on home ice, pretty much downplayed the loss. And one of his quotes was, we have 91 points. We have a good hockey team. We weren't good tonight. So I'm not going to belabor every quote that he said, but I'll just throw it back to you guys. Maybe we can start here. We kind of mentioned this just in the past few minutes, how in talking about fans booing, like we just kind of said, like, yeah, well, you know, you're going to lose over the course of 82 and you're going to lose at times when you have a good effort. And if the effort's there, you can learn from it and look the other way and not lose sleep. Is this kind of where Monty's coming from in these post-game comments?
I think so. I think it's twofold. I think part of it is a pretty legitimate reaction to this game where I think he did feel like they did a lot of good things. He mentioned that they had a lot of good scoring chances. You know, we touched on a little bit, like, what did they end up with? 37 shots on goal. And then another, I think it was another 28 attempts that were either blocked or missed the net. Forgot to turn off my email notifications. All right, there we go. But so I think like that part of it's legit reaction of like, we did a lot of good things. We just made a couple too many mistakes, which some of which we touched on, you know, the Lauri pinch, Shattenkirk losing a net front battle, penalty trouble in the first period, back-to-back stick fouls gave the Blues a 5-on-3. I know I saw fans on Twitter saying like bad calls. I thought they were both pretty legit, at least in today's NHL. Like, you get a stick in someone's midsection, you're going to get a penalty. But I also think part of it is Montgomery probably like reading the team knows, okay, we just had a stretch of four really good games. We've been playing better hockey. You can't jump down their throat after one loss. Like, that could easily come across to players as like overreaction, kind of like the fans booing probably came across to players like an overreaction. Like, really, you're going to boo us, you know, one bad game after, you know, four pretty good ones. So I think that's the way that as well.
There was one reporter who I think was asking questions as if the sky was falling as well. And I'm like, come on, bro. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to get answers. Like, I thought they were legit.
He asked Marshawn like the same question three times and Marshawn gave him the same answer three times. And I don't know. He's annoying. He has to.
Oh, look at Bridget starting a media feud now. Usually this is my territory.
It's just annoying. You know exactly who I'm talking about. My face, I have to make sure my face doesn't say what my brain is thinking sometimes when he asks questions and my eyes are just like, but yeah, I mean, he's like asking, did they get complacent because they were winning? It's like, I don't know. It's not like, yeah, I digress. I don't get to ask questions because some people just like yell three questions and don't get to, you know, they cut off all the other people that want to talk. But we do have some media drama occasionally. I think Scott
me in that. This case. Like, I actually don't have any issues here. So
really? Oh man.
Not really.
You should hear what the other people are saying.
I know what other people say. I talk to people.
Oh God. All right. Well, anyway, there's been some overreactions. This is the main point by, you know, all around people probably overreacting to it. It wasn't like the stinkers that they had in their losses out on the West Coast. Like Western Canada on the road trip to Canada.
I think even bigger stinkers, I think, were at home. It was like that Calgary and Washington.
Oh, well, the Washington one was probably the worst.
And then at New York against the Islanders, was that a week ago Saturday?
They're mixed in.
Yeah.
They're kind of just mixed in since the All-Star break. So yeah, guys, where do we want to go from here after I derailed us with my digressions about people?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the biggest thing we wanted to discuss, I mean, again, we can, Scott, I don't know if you had more on the non-goal, and Bridge, if you had more on the third D period, we can certainly knock those out quickly, and then we can kind of jump to forward-looking.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, I didn't really have anything else on the non-goal. I think I got off my chest, so I don't know if you guys do.
That's important. I don't need you feeling stressed out or burdened in this podcast. You feel clear. You feel good. We talked about it. That's good. Yep. Okay, good.
It's really, he's aired it out. It's like a weight is off his shoulders.
Good. Okay. All right. Well,
I just really want the NHL to figure its fucking shit out, honestly. I'm good. All right.
Give him some space.
Maybe he wasn't done. Maybe he had a little bit more to say.
Give him some space, everybody. Bridget, maybe we can tie in a third D pair into the future looking stuff as well. So, you know, Monty says he's not too worried about the loss. Okay, fine. Forward looking, we have 15 games left in the regular season going into the playoffs. Bridget and Scott, what do you individually want to see this Bruins team improve upon or take note of as they gear up for the postseason?
Well, so just like things that have popped up kind of over and over again this season, like you want to see consistency. You don't want to see, you know, listen, if they have a couple more rough games over the final 15, that's okay. Like I don't think anyone really plays 15 really good games in a row, even in the playoffs, but like teams that win the Stanley Cup have duds in the playoffs mixed in along the way. But it can't be like every third or fourth game. Like you shouldn't have four or five more stinkers in these final 15. So more night to night consistency. I want to see them in more close games in the third period with a one or two goal lead, because I think every opportunity to practice closing out games they can get is going to be beneficial, because they've done it a couple times recently. They've closed out games against Toronto. They extended the lead against Pittsburgh, but they haven't done enough where I think anyone's going to feel good about it. So the more of those chances you can get, the better. So I'd like to see that. And then just the puck management that leads to odd man rushes that you see improvement. Like you see the games against Toronto and Edmonton and even Pittsburgh where it's like, wow, those are high-powered offenses that, you know, they kept pretty quiet. And it's like, okay, they can do it. And then you get last night and you get, you know, bad Lauri pinch and you get bad transition defense on the side goal where Charlie Coyle came back and kind of did a flyby, which you almost never see from him. And there were a couple times with Coyle where we know he was dealing with an illness. He missed morning skate. He was late getting on the ice for warmups. He was early leaving the ice for warmups. And there were a couple of times where I was like, I kind of wonder if he's still battling it, because he didn't really look like himself. And that was one of them. It's like, you don't see him kind of do a flyby, you know, just reaching out with a stick very often. Like usually he gets in better position than that.
He only won, Coyle only won 36% of his face offs. Like you could tell he was definitely a little bit off.
Yeah. So those are the main things that I want to see.
Well, first of all, I think when you talk about what you want to see in the last 15 games of the season, and you can extend that into the playoffs, I'm trying to not be like overly looking into just the St. Louis game, right? Like, If you look back a few games on what they did well and what they haven't done well, it feels like the bottom six is doing what you want it to do. Oh, by the way, Johnny Beecher took warmups. We didn't bring that up yet, but if you're happy with the fourth line, you kind of have to ask, is Beecher back? Is what's going on with that? But
they sent him back down after the game, so it doesn't.
So unfortunately for him, the fourth line had their best game.
Yeah,
probably this season when he was looking to get back in the lineup. So that definitely did not help him out. But the idea with if they wanted to bring him back in would be the faceoff stuff, and they were bad at the dot against St. Louis. Like I mentioned, Coyle's numbers were pretty bad, so that kind of skewed it. Zaka was below 50%. The only person that was above it was Geeky. Boquist was 0-for-5. So I'd say face-off numbers need to get better so that possession, you have more possession. But that's kind of difficult to improve with only 15 games left in the season. Like, you kind of know what you have with these guys at center in terms of face-offs, I feel like, at this point.
I feel like for Beecher, again, just because of where we are in the season, I mean, look, you haven't seen Pat Maroon yet. He's probably going to be still, he might get into game action probably with under 10 games to go in the regular season based on his timeline. But I could be wrong about that. I mean, I could see a situation where the Bruins, depending on a playoff matchup, might, let's say they were to play, if they were to play Toronto in the first round, I don't think the Bruins would hate having Jesper Boquist in that fourth line because of his skating speed up and down the ice and his ability pretty much outside the faceoff circle to play a pretty strong game. But if the Bruins were to play Florida or Carolina in coming rounds or the Rangers, I could see them maybe wanting a fourth line with Maroon, Brazo, and Johnny Beecher, because Beecher has size, but he also has speed and faceoff ability. And then you have some bigger guys on the wings. So Beecher might be a situation of timing an opponent. And it seems pretty clear they may have called him up because of the uncertainty surrounding Charlie Coyle last night, and then they would send him back down afterwards. But for me, what I want to see in the last 15 games is intensity. And I just think that it's the NHL playoffs are such a different game from the regular season, where you have every team, they're on different schedules. Your opponent could be in the middle of a 3-game and 4-night situation. They could be in the middle of a back-to-back. They could be in the middle of travel. Like, there's intangible reasons as to why you might not get someone's best on a given night. There's reasons why you might not be able to give your best on a given night in the regular season with the schedule. And all those things kind of, you add into the fact that when the playoffs start, everybody's turning it up 10 notches for the ultimate prize. I think the Bruins they can't flip that switch on game one. Like, they need to, their defensive intensity, their intensity on the forecheck, their attention to detail, and their situational execution of, you know, 6-on-5 situations or special team situations. Everything has to be sharp before game one. And not that it has to be perfect, but that's what they should be focusing on. Treat every game from here on out like it's a playoff game. I know it's tough to manufacture that, but you know what? When you're a professional, you have to do it, because that's what's going to make you better in the spring. And you're not just going to turn it on in game one. It's not going to happen. So I want intensity to be the key word for this team in the locker room the last 15 games.
Yeah, or play like you're trying to make the playoffs. Like, it's not safe. You know what I mean? Like, play like you're a bubble team and you're trying to like scrap your way in.
Well, and we've talked about it, like how this team does kind of have a habit of playing up and down to competition. And they certainly brought that intensity against Toronto last week. And they have games on the schedule where you hope, you know, whether they just bring it on their own or maybe the opponent brings it out of them with a physical start or something. But you got the Rangers, you got two against Florida left. Tampa, you face Carolina twice in a week in April. Like, those are all games that should really start to ramp up. Like, that's actually, to me, that's especially since you're safe in the playoffs, like, that's a good schedule to have down the stretch, where you're gonna face all the other top teams in the East pretty much down the stretch here. So including two each with Florida and Carolina. So hopefully those games pull the best out of the Bruins and they get, you know, a little taste of playoff action. And most of those teams are still battling for seeding too. So it's not, I don't really think anyone's going to be on cruise control, or at least they shouldn't. I mean, maybe Florida, if they start to pull away a little, but that hasn't happened. The Bruins are only 1 point behind them. So could they play down to a Pittsburgh, Washington, Ottawa towards the end of the year? Maybe, and that's not ideal. Like, it shouldn't happen. But I'm much more interested in those games against the top teams, right? Like, an off Monday night against the Blues. Again, it shouldn't happen, and I get it. If you paid $300 for a ticket, you're disappointed. But that wouldn't worry me as much as if they no-show against the Rangers next week.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just looking at the schedule you were mentioning, Scott. It's you're absolutely right. It's the point that I made about intensity, the schedule. If the Bruins don't want to be intense, their schedule is going to make them, right? I mean, you're talking about what, 6 or 7, 8 games remaining of the last 15 that are against teams that could win a Stanley Cup and our conference foes that you're going to have to try to probably get through. So yes, the schedule is tailor-made for them to enter the playoffs playing the right way, because either two things are going to happen. They're going to have to play the right way to beat these teams down the stretch, or they're going to lose to these teams down the stretch and have a very fresh reminder heading into April what it's going to take to beat them.
Not to mention, by the way, there's also a game at Nashville in there, and the Predators have been one of the hottest teams in the NHL for the past month. So that's, I realize that maybe doesn't stand out as like a circle it on the calendar game, but that's a team that's playing extremely well too.
Yeah, it's just because, I mean, most people here watching like conference games or division games, if they're not watching the Bruins, are probably not watching a lot of Preds games. But they're on a hot streak too. I want to get your opinion on something I saw the other day though in one of the Preds games, which was when they played against Minnesota and they pulled Fleury in overtime, game tied. And yeah. I think it's amazing. I think it's great. I'll tell you what some coaches told me about it, but first just your thoughts on it.
It's a move out of desperation. The Wild need every single point. They're what, 7 points out of the playoffs or something? So they absolutely need every last point. So I get it, going for the win. The flip side, and I think a lot of people didn't know this. I'm sure the Wild did. Fans might not have. If you pull the goalie in overtime, other than on a delayed penalty, and you give up a goal, you lose the point you already earned. So you end up with 0 points.
Oh, wow.
It is an incredibly bold, risky move. And it worked out for the Wild. They scored, won the game and got the 2 points. But yeah, I didn't look at like, do the Wild suck in shootouts or something? You know what I mean? Like, would they just not been like, we can't go to shootout? That would certainly factor in, but I like taking risks. I like, being unconventional. So I liked it, but if it backfired, like that would have been, there would have been an awful lot of backlash too.
When did they put that rule in?
I did not know about that rule. That's very interesting.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I don't know when they put it in. I'd forgotten about it until Elliot Friedman tweeted it, and then I was like, oh yeah, that's, like, I remember hearing that at some point before.
It's kind of a dumb rule.
Obviously, like, it just happens so infrequently that you don't think about it.
I mean, you're taking a chance enough pulling your goalie. It's like, talk about not wanting to incentivize the team to do it. Oh, and you're gonna lose a point if you know what I mean? It's like, you're already risking losing the game and giving up the second point.
Well, I don't understand why try to decentivize it, honestly. Like, it makes things more interesting. If that's how you want to go about it, you're already taking a risk. Like, I don't know. It's one of those plays that starts a conversation about all sorts of little nuanced things. But it is out of desperation for a team that, you know, they need the points. It's hard because people will say the other way too, right? Like, you lose two or you get two. Like, that's a huge swing either way. I was talking to a coach about this the other day because we were about to head into the hockey's tournament. The team couldn't go down in the standings, but they could go up one spot. And the coach was telling me, if we are tied in the third, I'm pulling my goalie. Like, I'm pulling my goalie. We're getting extra attacker on if we're tied. Like, we're winning this, like, because we can't go backwards. So, like, once you kind of get into this all or nothing kind of mindset, you're more willing to do some desperate stuff. Or at least in this situation, when I was talking to this coach, there was no negative consequences to losing. Obviously for Minnesota, there was. But it's just kind of interesting to get inside the mind of someone who's like, I'm pulling the goalie. Like, I'm going for it. You see it when, and you saw the Bruins pull Swayman with 8 minutes left yesterday. So that also came from desperation, being down by, was it three or four at the time? I think it was three at the time.
I'm glad you bring that up, Bridget, because I was going to ask you guys about that. Monty pulling the goalie with like eight and change to go down 4-1. I get it, right? You got to get three goals to tie the game, but you run the risk of the game being over with 8.5 minutes left. And I personally think he pulled the goalie about 3 minutes too early. If you're down 4-1 with like 5 minutes to go, go for it. But 8 minutes, I mean, if the Bruins don't, I guess another way to put it, if the Bruins get the game to 4-2 before the 5 minute mark remaining in the game, then it happens where teams can score two goals in the last 5 minutes with the goalie pulled and stuff. I would have given the Bruins until the as close to a whistle as you could with 5 minutes remaining, then I would have pulled the goalie. But 8.5, it's like, okay, well, if they score, which they did, game over.
I had no problem with it. I like being aggressive with that kind of stuff.
But then you're watching a game and it's 5-1 with 8 minutes left. You know it's over for sure.
Yeah. I guess I don't care about that. Like,
yeah.
Game's most likely over anyways. We haven't exactly given fans the most entertaining game. So if it's over with 8.5 left versus, you know, maybe we make it 4-2 with 1.5 minutes left, like, that doesn't really change much for me. You know, I think, and Monty kind of explained this, but, you know, Pastrnak scores early in the third, I think like 18 minutes left in the game. Bruins had some chances after that, couldn't bury it, just couldn't quite break through again. Talking about a 10-minute stretch where it just stayed 4-1. I think I was fine with it to try to give his team kind of that extra push, get one. And then, you know, if you score with 7-8 minutes left, cut it to 4-2. Put the goalie back in, you know, and then take a more conventional approach if you're still down by two with, you know, whatever, 3 minutes left.
You also have a higher likelihood of drawing a penalty when you have the extra attacker on than when you're 5-on-5. So a lot of times you're like, you might just be looking to get that advantage, right? Like try to score, try to draw a penalty. Then maybe you put your goalie back in, you get a regular power play, which is, you know, less risky, which they did end up on the power play later in that game, and put Swayman back in. But there's reasons why you do it early. Rico Blasi once in the NCAA tournament pulled his goalie with like, I forget, there was like 15 minutes left in the game, and they were down, but they were down by like four or five goals, and they came back and they almost tied it. It was crazy.
By the way, Montgomery does have a hat. Like, he's done this before. It just, the Bruins have trailed so infrequently during his two seasons here, but there was a game last year where he did it with like 9 minutes left when they were down by a few goals. And I know there was a game in Dallas where he did it with like over 10 minutes left. So he this is definitely like a, you know, a strategy thing for him. It's not just like willy nilly, like, yeah, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to pull it. It's clearly like something he kind of believes in.
Maybe he knows Rico.
So
yeah, I'm sure he does. They would have crossed paths at some point.
Yeah, they must have. Yeah, and Rico was the Miami, Ohio hockey coach. If people don't know what we're talking about, but Sean Corrali played on that team.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. So guys,
he was the coach that BU beat in the 09 national championship.
Yes.
I forget who they were playing against for that game where they pulled the goalie, but anyway, yeah.
So we have about 10.
Sorry.
It's okay. We got about 10 minutes left. There's a couple, two quick things I wanted to get to. The first one is, Scott, I saw that you tweeted out maybe a week or two ago, or maybe you said it verbally, I forget, but you want the NHL to go to a 3-point system because this whole go to the overtime session or shootout and you get a point, it just creates a lot of, I don't know, not confusion, but it's just a lot of loopholes in the standings and teams that can get or whatnot. But my question for you is, would you rather them go to a 3-point system or just revert back to a 2-point system but like no extra point? So like, you know, it goes to overtime, you don't get a point at all. It's either 0 points or 2 points.
I like the 3-point system. Because I think a regulation win should be worth a little more than an overtime or shootout win. So that to me, like,
okay,
college does it. That it makes sense to me. You know, I think PWHL does it too, Bridget, right?
Yeah.
So 3 points regulation win, 2 overtime or shootout win, 1 for overtime or shootout loss, 0 regulation loss. I just think it puts more of an emphasis on regulation. It would hurt the Bruins this year, who have racked up a lot of overtime shootout loser points. But it also devalues that a little bit, where it's not now an overtime loss. It isn't just, 50% of a win. Now it's only 33% of a regulation win. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a good point. So that would be the incentive to go to 3 points. While the Bruins point record would be short lived, if that were the case.
Yes.
Yeah, true.
And by the way, just to go back for 1 second to that game I was talking about, it was Miami was down 6-2, pulled their goalie with 12 minutes left. They scored 3 unanswered goals with the extra attacker on the ice against Providence College, but PC ended up beating them 7-5. And that's the year that PC won the national title.
National championship got canceled, Bridget.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is why Scott didn't want to talk about it, because PC beat BU for the 2015 title. Basically, the point being, you can score multiple times. If you're aggressive, like in the right desperate situation, you go out there. It's probably a rarity to score 3 unanswered goals with an extra attacker on, but you can do it.
You guys might be too young for this, or at least too young to have like followed or watched it. But if people want to see something crazy, go watch the final minutes of the 2004 NCAA national championship game. It was at the Garden, and it was Denver, Maine. And Maine was down by a goal, got a late 5-on-3 power play, and then pulled the goalie for like over a minute of 6-on-3. And Denver held on for a 1-0 win. But it looks every bit as insane. Like, it was an absolute shooting gallery, and somehow Maine didn't score.
Yeah, 6-on-3 is not ideal. You're trying to defend a 1-goal lead. I love college hockey. College hockey, you see a lot of random shit that you probably wouldn't see in the pros because stakes are different. There are way more teams in college hockey, and there's more desperation, and there's such different skill levels. Like, some teams are awful, and some teams are good. And so, and those matchups can be interesting sometimes. But anyway, I spend a lot of time talking about college hockey at my other job. We don't need to do it here.
Well, one thing I do want you to talk about before we sign off, we have about 5 minutes. You and Scott are about to have a 5-hour skate pod session on the road again, heading up to Montreal on your little road trip. So I kind of want to hear what you guys have in plan, like having story. So you two, if you don't kill each other by the time you get up to Montreal,
I'm my money's on we don't make it out of Massachusetts.
what do you guys have planned?
Bridget's picking me up in Lowell. It's 10 minutes to the New Hampshire border. We're not gonna make it that far.
We're not making it. Someone's gonna end up getting tossed. It's probably me. Depends what Scott tries to put on my radio. We still actually don't know who's driving. So I don't know if I trust Scott to drive my car. I don't know if he trusts me to drive his car if we wanted to switch drivers. We do have a few things that we're sure about, and that all has to do with the beer drinking situation that we're heading for. So we're stopping at Hill Farmstead in Vermont on the way there, and then getting there, I'm making Scott drink a beer tower with me once we get there on Wednesday night. And
not in Vermont, right? Because then you still have to drive afterwards.
No. Once we get into our hotel, put our stuff away, and then go have a beer tower. We'll see. We're doing it. I shouldn't say we'll see what the results are, but we are doing it. And then Thursday is the game, obviously. And Friday we're coming back through Vermont a different way and going to Alchemist.
And probably recording a podcast somewhere in there, so we will have a...
Yeah, I don't know when in there.
Yeah, we'll figure it out off
here. We'll have to link up after you two have the beer towers. And,
right, yeah. We'll just record after that.
That'll be an interesting one.
Here's the thing. Last time we were in Montreal, remember how much difficulty I had recording that fucking podcast? Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
It was awful. And the hotel Wi-Fi just did not want to work.
Yeah, I remember that.
Figure it out.
Scott was supposed to be there, but he had to... He last second, I think he... What was the reasoning for
that? No, I was never really planning to do that one. I think I had considered it like earlier, but it just, for some reason, it just wasn't going to work out.
The one that got canceled, we've been trying to do this for a while. The one that got canceled was the year before because all the Bruins caught COVID the week of. They canceled the game, and Scott and I had already had, I had already gotten my COVID test to get across the border, and within like 24 hours of us leaving, the game was canceled, so we didn't go.
That's what I was thinking of.
And then last year I went by myself, and then now here we finally get the road trip. Brian, you want to come?
Oh, I would love to. Unfortunately, I can't. I have stuff going on back home, but you guys have fun. I want pictures, videos, post it to the Twitter account.
You just wait. There will be pictures, there will be videos, and I have...
By the way, we haven't brought this up since, but we had people react guessing what Brian does for work after Bridget.
What do you mean?
One of the podcasts you missed, Bridget was like, I don't even know what Brian does for work. And then we were just like, yeah, people can just guess. And we got some responses of people who did guess.
Really? Where are these responses? Was it on Sunday Skate?
No, it was one of the podcast you missed for some reason. You weren't able to record, I think because you had work, you had meetings.
Yeah,
you had like an emergency meeting.
Yeah, well, I called Scott Work's been very busy. And last week we were supposed to record at like 7, and I was at the office late, and I just called Scott and I was like, I can't.
Yeah, he had a really important plumber's meeting that night.
No. Yeah, so someone guessed plumber.
No, it's because I said plumber as a joke.
Oh, okay.
And then
no. Should I spoil it, or should I just keep people guessing?
I was gonna say it's up to you if you want to just keep
the mystery. I like the mystery.
I mean, listen, Brian is at his office right now. So like he does have an office.
Yeah.
So he's not like he's not, we can rule out like roofer. He's not recording on the roof somewhere. Like
yeah, no, we can rule out plumber.
He's not a crossing guard.
I'm not an escort.
He's not a police officer. He doesn't just record while he's on detail on the side of the highway.
Yeah, no.
No. I'm none of those things. I guess we'll just keep the mystery going. I don't want to ruin it at this point.
No, don't, because I'm gonna want to get a few more guesses in at some point. So just don't tell us.
Yeah. It's not a producer anymore, as Bridget knows.
No, but, I didn't say that.
But, okay, so that went off the rails. But all right, we gotta go. You two have fun in Montreal, and we'll check back in with you guys north of the border, maybe, and we'll report for
Keep
Friday.
Keep an eye on the Twitter because I have the password, and I'm posting whatever I feel like. So,
okay.
I also have the password, so I can just change it first.
Okay, looks like we're about to go block each other out right now.
She'll be posting and Scott will be deleting.
Yeah. Like Bridget did on the last episode.
I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you on Friday.